Ooh, careful.
Nearly spilt it.
Happy birthday.
For yesterday. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The grand old age of 50.
What was it like having a second birthday in lockdown?
Well, I'm not one for a fuss.
I don't mean lockdown this time, because obviously last year we couldn't go out at all, but this year at least we could set foot outside the door.
You arranged a lovely surprise.
I did.
A small number of people shouting distance away from in a restaurant.
A coronavirus-friendly, socially distanced, everybody
fully
sitting
at
different tables.
So yes, it is what it is, isn't it? You know, this year's birthday was a slight improvement on last year's when we couldn't actually get out of the house. But then I don't need fireworks and 21 gun salutes, to be honest.
So no,
I'm all right. Not that anyone was about to do me a 21 gun salute.
And today we're going to go as a household to visit another household,
which is allowed too. Actually, we're
just about. And then on Monday the regulations change again. I think a little bit more lenient with the amount of people that can meet, but the bars and everything else still shut from 5 o'clock onwards.
And we've got news coming up of the end of the state of alarm and what that might mean as well. So that's it. I'm Oliver.
I'm Vicky. Hello.
And this is the Mallorca Mallorca podcast.
I say Mallorca and you say Majorca. I say
Majorca
and you say
Mallorca.
Mallorca, Majorca, Mallorca, Majorca. Let's call the whole thing off.
So first off, we should speak about the passing of Prince Philip, His Royal Highness.
Duke of Edinburgh.
Yes.
Queen's consort and all the rest of it. Yes. Yeah, it was sad news, actually, wasn't it? On April the 9th. So what was that, Friday?
99 years old.
Yeah, and quite close to his hundreds. But
I actually had quite a bit of a moment about it, because I feel when something like that happens in Britain and we're living over here, sometimes it does feel a little bit, I'm doing it again now.
Are you having a wobble?
I'm having a wobble. I feel it's like you feel a bit disconnected from the people that, you know, you grew up knowing about and like were big figures in your life. And it is the end of a major era in the British monarchy, I think.
It is.
Prince Philip is a milestone.
I'm not the Union Jack wearing, flag waving.
Neither am I.
Royalist at all. But it is, you know, I am indisputably British and probably will be till the day I die, even though I don't live there anymore. And it's part of the furniture, isn't it? You know, Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, has been part of the furniture for, well, certainly all of my lifetime, and probably most of my parents' lifetime too. Most of the lifetimes of almost everybody. So, well, you know, to mark his passing marks a change. And he seemed like a decent old stick, didn't he? He had his moments.
It was funny, on a Friday, a couple of people wanted to talk to me about it. And one was like, oh, Felipe, he's died. Like consoling me.
Are you all right?
And then another person was like, oh, Felipe. So, and I said, well, actually, a lot of people are going to be upset about this, but also a lot of people aren't going to care. And I was reading the newspapers on Saturday about the actual press, the TV coverage on Friday after his death was announced. And the BBC switched to full-on Prince Philip tribute.
They call it Operation Fourth Bridge.
Is that what they call it?
They've got a code. Obviously, there will be one for the Queen, probably one for the Prime Minister, and all of that kind of stuff. It is the set agreed protocol about what happens.
But here, Ollie, listen to this. The viewing figures on the BBC dropped by several percent, and they received so many complaints that things like EastEnders are being cancelled that day.
Yeah, that's just people, though, isn't it?
It's the sign of the times.
Yeah.
But I quite liked what you told me about the Spanish royal family, the message they sent to the Queen.
Actually, it was interesting watching the coverage from here, because just to go back a bit, a couple of years ago when Harry and Meghan got married was around the same time that the crown passed from Juan Carlos to Felipe in Spain. And honestly, there was almost no coverage of the changing of the king here.
Yeah.
But in comparison, they were going crazy for Harry and Meghan.
It was a Hollywood story.
I know
it
is, isn't it? And it's weird to look at it like that. And actually, I'm just following I follow quite a few local Mallorcan things on Twitter, as you might imagine. And Ibi Tres, which is the Islas Baleares television and radio little network, regional telly, they were tweeting out, you know, condolences and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's got everywhere, really. But the royal family, King Felipe of Spain and Princess princess, Queen Letizia, called her Queen Latifah last time.
Did not.
I did. It's only a joke, but I must stop doing it.
Yes, you must.
Sent their messages of condolences. In a very personal way, actually, there was a message to Aunt Lilibet about dear Uncle Philip and his passing. But it's the Spanish royal family is very, very well connected to, everybody, really. They're actually related to both sides.
Really?
Felipe. So, because Prince Philip was from the royal house, he was born in Greece in Corfu. He was of the royal families of Denmark, Greece, and Russia. And Queen Sophia, who is King Felipe's mum, was also from a Greek royal family. So, they were kind of Felipe's maternal great grandfather.
Draw all the dots together.
King Constantine I of Greece.
Right, okay.
1868 to 1923.
I almost did a teenager. Whatever.
And Prince, where are we? Hang on. His maternal grandmother, so this is Felipe's maternal grandmother, which is Princess Victoria of Hesse, was also granddaughter of Queen Victoria, who was basically nine of Queen Victoria's grandchildren married into other European families. So
they've got it sewn up, haven't they? Really,
they have
these
a bit.
People?
They are. It just. Just as a marginal Republican, it does raise your eyebrow slightly.
But so, I did appreciate that beautiful photograph. We should share it again of Prince Philip on his last public engagement in 2017. Was it 2017? No, 2019, when he was 97 years old.
Yeah.
Or 96 years old. And he was, it must be later than that. I want to say 2019.
Something like that. It wasn't very long ago.
It was a beautiful photograph, anyway, of him stood in the rain, he'd taken his hat off to perform a salute, and there was all this rain just dripping onto his.
Well, he was taking the salute to the Royal Marines, wasn't it? So, sorry.
His bald head, backlit. It was an absolutely stunning photograph. So elegant, so poignant, so. Dignified, I want to say.
That is the word, isn't it?
So. And it was really, it's a great image. So we'll put that on our Instagram feed so you know what we're talking about.
It was,
about.
Yeah. And hopefully credit the photographer and find out who that was.
We do know who it is.
As photographers, it's nice to see photographers getting the credit for their work. They sometimes don't. So, and his funeral will be next Sunday, won't it? I think.
No, next Saturday, the 17th of April. Okay. It's just been announced.
And it is going to be subject to, there's a couple of bits of interesting controversy around this, actually. It's going to be subject to the similar kind of COVID regulations that other funerals have sadly had great many funerals over the last year. So there isn't going to be a mass gatherings. So there are going to be limited number of guests, attendees. Is that right? Mourners is probably a better word, isn't it? Mm-hmm. One of them is going to be Harry, who's coming back from America, is it? Canada? But one of them isn't going to be his missus.
That's not controversial. That's fairly sensible.
No,
she's
I haven't got
pregnant.
To the controversial bit now.
Oh, okay.
But she's pregnant, so she won't be travelling. Harry will be travelling. But Boris Johnson won't be going.
Why?
Apparently it's due to regulations, but there is quite a lot of rumour that the Duke of Edinburgh was not a big fan of Boris Johnson.
Good, well, it's made me like Prince Philip even more.
I know, it's suddenly got up in my estimation as well.
You're not invited, Fluffy.
It's like, get your hair cut. Well, do your top button up. Do your belt up.
Smarten yourself up.
Well, actually, Boris...
Do you think that's what it is?
I don't know.
He's shy of a coat.
I tell you what people say about Prince Philip was that he did not suffer fools gladly, and I'm not making too many judgments about Boris Johnson, but one could imagine that a staunch military man with a you know, might look a little unfavourably upon the scruffy little
gats.
who's going to have his haircut on Monday, apparently?
Is he?
Well, I mean, part of the reason he's getting more scruffy is because you're not allowed hairdressers are closed in the UK.
He's making a point. He could do his own hair.
He could do,
Everyone has done it.
I know. I think he might be making a point, but he has cancelled his Monday pint. So he was going for the classic British politician fatal opportunity of a pint in a pub tomorrow when pubs open in the UK. But he's not going to do that now, out of mark of respect. So he's going to go and have his hair cut.
He's going to get a takeaway instead.
Exactly. So rest in peace, Big Phil. That's not a bad innings, isn't it? So
impressive. Of course, people say, he didn't work a day in his life. And the other way is say, well, he did actually, because he wrote all his own speeches. He supported lots of causes through the years that were very unpopular before other people's time, like conservation and eco related things. And I think that he was He's a misunderstood chap in many ways. He also did shoot a tiger.
Yeah.
And call and make jokes about Chinese people and slitty eyes. So, you know, balance.
I know. Yes, exactly.
Anyway, let's move on.
Have we got any good news?
Well, no.
Not for a while.
Let's talk about the coronavirus wave. It's coming. It's continuing to grow in Spain again. We're looking at, is it wave number four now?
I think we're up to wave number four. There is an increase, not in the Balearics, or not much in the Balearics anyway, but...
not yet.
No, the rolling number of cases is, you know, they tend to measure it in cases per 100,000. I don't know why they do that, because it would just, like, my maths teacher would say just roll down a bit, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
So the case number, community case number in Spain at the moment is 174.52 per 100,000 inhabitants. The Spanish government consider an extreme risk when it gets to 250 per 100,000. So, and it's edging towards that in some places.
It's going up. Yeah,
yeah, Madrid, Basque Country and Navarra, as well as those little enclaves in North Africa, Melilla and Ceuta, have already gone past the 250 mark. But the lowest actually are Valencia at 34.64, the Balearic Islands at 64.27.
Come on, the
Galicia
Balearics.
And Murcia also around similar sorts of figures. So the bit we were in the last couple of podcasts we were talking about when the arrival of German tourists was sparking concern that we would end up with a sort of another spike. Mm-hmm. After, it's probably a bit too early to tell, isn't it?
Yeah.
There tends to be at least a sort of 2 to 3 week lead period. So hopefully figures stay low here. Obviously, hopefully figures stay low everywhere, but we're talking about the Balearics in this podcast. But we'll see what happens because... coming soon, you're gesturing towards something.
I'm just wondering.
My glasses don't work that distance.
I'm just wondering if we should talk about the Germans now.
Well, we probably should because, there's kind of good news, bad news, really. So we're not sure quite yet whether there's been a spike effect from the German tourists coming over Easter, but there is some bad news on the way in terms of tourists potentially coming here.
So, of Germany, the coronavirus is getting dangerously high again. And the German Chancellor, Mrs. Merkel, is...
Mutter.
Mutter?
They call her mother, don't they? Her nickname.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Mutter Merkel. Mutter?
I admire her so much. She's quite a woman. obviously, at the moment, they're looking at the situation and they're going to make a decision about whether or not they're going to be going into a full-on nobody-leave-their-house lockdown. Maybe even tomorrow, even Monday the 12th.
This is quite serious for the Balearics. The two, by far and away, the biggest markets for foreign holidays in the Balearics are the Germans and the Brits. The Germans, so that Germany may be closing their borders, effectively stopping people from leaving. British tourists are allowed to move. I think there is some talk about May the 17th as being the earliest.
It's been announced.
That's confirmed, right. However, a couple of, is it Jet 2, which is a big holiday company here, their package holiday company and flight-only company, they've postponed their entire sort of offering, really, until, is it June?
Well, June the 24th, they decided to delay flights until. Hmm. It's a huge blow for Mallorca because Jet 2 brings so many people here.
Yeah.
So this is a big deal.
And they're effectively citing a level of confusion over whether they're going to be flying or not flying and what they're going to be restricted from doing. These businesses are on their beam end as well, so they're making complicated decisions themselves. It's that is only one tour company. There are others that will be continuing to fly, at least for now, but we'll see. So it's not great news for the local economy.
Because of the slowness of the vaccinations here, that's also got to be looked at. It's like we need that kind of breathing space in order for the vaccination process to speed up here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that, we know two people who've just had a vaccination yesterday.
Here?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Trudy, friend of the show. She had a vaccination yesterday. And Diane, cake maker to the stars, she has also had a vaccination yesterday, plus quite a few people this past week that are actually more in our age range, which is, I'm sorry to say it, the 50s now. Ooh. Darling.
I've squeaked in.
Yes, well, you know, you're either in or you're out, sunshine, and you're in now. And so they're definitely moving along now that the decisions about who gets the AstraZeneca vaccination have been made. That has actually probably cleared up a few things as well.
Yeah, so I guess to summarise that, it's, you know, in the very short term, this is not great news for the economy because, you know, the expected start of the summer season seems to be getting pushed. However, if it's, you know, if it's sacrificing the next month or two for a more secure, longer term future rather than rush it, I think that's got to be a good thing.
Well, over Easter, a lot of businesses reopened and now will be shutting down again because there's not enough.
And it is quite normal, isn't it, to do that?
Not to shut down completely, but they'll shut down again and wait for the next influx of visitors. In fact, I know, personally know, a few German people in the port of Andratch who have got a holiday home here, and their plan is to swoop back into Germany, and I don't know if they'll be able to do it now, but to go back to Germany and then immediately come back out again and stay in Mallorca because it's just, they don't want to be in a full-on lockdown with the rest of the...
Well, our case rates here are very low and it's about to get sunny and warm.
Exactly. Who can blame them?
And if they're about to shut the borders in Germany, I wonder if there's going to be a bit of a rush today to Mallorca from Germany.
Maybe people are looking at
tomorrow as being shut down. Get yourself to the sunshine.
But in the meantime, there's been quite a lot of confusion amongst British people.
Can I just say that the state of alarm is supposed to end, the national state of alarm is supposed to end on May the 9th, which will probably spark some more confusion.
God.
Actually. As it stands, Spain has...
That's a month away.
Well, no, but Spain, yes, it is. Spain has devolved government, similar in the UK to the Scottish Parliament, the Welsh Assembly, the Northern Ireland Assembly. So we have a Balearic Parliament, Balearic President. But the national state of alarm is sort of mandated by Madrid. When that finishes, as it's proposed at the moment, it's not going to be extended beyond May the 9th. So effectively, control will then pass to the regional governments, which don't have the same powers. So for instance, you know, each different region will then start making its own decisions about local restrictions and closing their borders or opening their borders. It was a bit of a mess when they did it last year because the state of alarm ended and then different areas started offering different...
It's a bit like the UK's thing where they did all those kind of, what was it they did, like the different levels all across the country.
Yeah.
Nobody really understood. If I'm driving from Leicester to Manchester, what have I got? Can I? And you know,
Different restrictions in Scotland and Wales compared to England. Yeah. And it's at the moment, there is effectively a national strategy here, although with some regional differences. But from May the 9th, as it stands at the moment, it's going to pass completely to the region. So Lord only knows what's going to happen.
I'd really love it if there wasn't a curfew that the bars and restaurants could open a bit later in the day.
Yeah, 5 o'clock is a bit early to shut, isn't it? So,
but anyway, go back to vaccinations.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about that because a lot of our listeners are English speaking people who may not know about how they can get the vaccination and how they get on the list even, because if you're not registered in the private health system, like our friend of the show Trudy and Cake Maker of the Stars Diane, then how are they going to get their vaccination? Because all of the coronavirus vaccinations are being administered by the Spanish Health Service.
Yes.
They're not being administered by private health insurance companies.
Which is as it should be. Although actually they are commandeering private health facilities, but divvying it up, you can't. What we're saying is, you can't basically go and buy yourself a vaccine.
No,
it's distributed using the national health system and the private resources, but on a national strategy level.
So here's what you do: if you are already registered in the for state healthcare, then you will be automatically contacted by your regional health authority when it's your turn to get your appointment. For people who are not registered on state healthcare, the British Embassy in Spain has provided a list of regional websites offering relevant information and the option for registering for the vaccine. The Spanish authorities are asking insurance companies to coordinate with regional health services in order to provide vaccines to their customers. So UK nationals living in Spain with private insurance can contact their local health centre or private insurance company for more information. And we will put a link to that British Embassy link in the show notes. The British Embassy in Spain has also announced that the UK government is going to extend support for vulnerable UK nationals applying for residency in European countries, because it's still creating a lot of confusion and stress for people. So they've funded some voluntary organisations, so people like Age in Spain, you can contact them and you can get more help through them as well, especially if you're language challenged, like many people are who live in the sort of traditional British retirement areas in Spain.
So. Yeah, and it does lead on to what we were saying in the last podcast about the issue of effectively unregistered British people who didn't get their paperwork sorted out before Brexit and are now in a sort of limbo situation, having overstayed the 90 days thing, which we're into now. So it's yet another reason to, if you're lurking under the radar, you're going to have sooner or later, in fact, now, you need to go and tell someone you're here, basically, to make sure that you are legally allowed to be here and that you are on the vaccine list, effectively.
And the UK Embassy in Spain has also issued another statement following some very damaging media reports in the UK about Spain deporting inverted commas British people from Spain at the end of their 90-day stay.
This was the usual suspects in the UK. The
Brexit. Who could it be?
it was kind of the Brexit supporting tabloids, the Express and the Mail, that kind of stuff. You know, how dare Spain start imposing these new regulations? Well, they weren't. You know, these are existing regulations that happened, that were in place long before Brexit. And also, so they were running stories saying, you know, people will be deported, and the Spanish government was saying, we're not doing that.
I got this article off the El País, mm-hmm. so I just want to credit them for this, because it's really important. The UK Embassy in Spain quoted a Spanish Ministry of Inclusion spokesperson as saying that the Spanish government has no plans to deport British citizens who have made Spain their home. They're working to provide a maximum legal certainty for British citizens resident in Spain. Throughout the negotiations, the issues of citizens' rights have been and remains one of the main priorities. Spain is the country of residence of the largest community of UK nationals in the EU. And The Guardian reported that Spanish government sources have lamented what they say are misleading reports in UK media, suggesting they will be deporting or kicking out 500 British nationals in the coming days. However, officials also note, hello, everybody, that since January the 1st, when the Brexit transition period ended, UK nationals have been bound by the same rules that apply to, I hate this term, third country citizens from outside the European Union, or Schengen space, which means that British nationals can spend 90 days out of every 180-day period within the Schengen area for tourism or other specific purposes, such as business meetings, without requiring a visa. The 90-day visitor rule does not apply to Britons like me and you, who are already registered as residents of Spain or are in the process of doing so.
Yes.
Thousands of previously unregistered UK nationals applied for Spanish residency before the deadline. But, guys, shockingly, there are still many others who have failed to do so, despite spending most of their time in the country. And this is I can't express how frustrating it must be for the people who are trying to make this possible now that all of this legal stuff has changed. You need to go and apply for your residency. You've actually missed the deadline, but if you can prove that you're a resident before the end of last year, then you still stand a chance.
Kind of I mean, they are basically just one step short of driving you to the office themselves. So they can't be making this much more easy. And just because Spain said that they won't be deporting people doesn't mean that if you haven't got your paperwork in place, that you won't be in a raft of trouble if they find you. Because it's the law. You know, the police's job is enforcing the law. If you are there, they might not be rounding you up in a van, but if they find you here without your papers, don't expect to be allowed to stay.
But if you're already in the process of applying for residency, the 90-day ruling doesn't apply to you.
No.
But you need to be able to prove that you're applied. You've applied. And the statement that they issued reminds UK nationals that if they and their family members were lawfully resident in Spain before the end of the transition period on the 31st of December 2020, they may continue to live, work, study and access benefits and services such as healthcare broadly as they did before the UK left the European Union. That our rights are protected by the withdrawal agreement, whether or not you've applied for residency. Yeah. So that is key. But so just bite the bullet and go and do the paperwork.
Exactly. And just to credit again, actually, that was a bit we've seen on El País, which is one of the national newspapers that does a specific page in English.
So very good.
Excellent. It is great. Google it. El País in English. And it seems to be a bit of a one-man show, more or less. It's Simon Hunter is the guy doing all the work there. And he's worth following on Twitter, actually. He's
really enjoy his
stuff. British guy based in
Madrid
and works for El País.
He's got two kids. Yeah. Actually, he just wrote an article about going back to the UK to visit his parents because his parents hadn't seen his children in a year. And it cost him just coronavirus tests, £1,400
for
three of them, because one of the kids is under the age of six and doesn't need to be tested. So that was his wife and one of his kids and himself. £1,400.
Yeah, I mean,
that's crazy money.
Well, it is what it is, isn't it? But that,
I mean, how much did the flight cost? £50 probably.
But that's also, you know, I mean, while we mention it again, that's going to end up adding a lot of money to the cost of a family holiday to this summer as well. So, you know, don't get your hopes up of any kind of business this summer. What have we got next?
Okay, let's talk a little bit about something that Spain is trying to push forward with, which is the subsidies on electric car sales. They've just dedicated €800 million to help subsidise any person that wants to buy an electric car until 2023. And the bonus scheme has begun. The Spanish government has approved a plan to encourage electric car sales, and private buyers will be entitled to subsidies of up to $7,000 per car, whilst authorities in small towns and companies buying fleets to use as taxis could get more money. The buyers of electric vans will get up to $9,000. And the incentive follows announcements earlier this year of government plans to promote the domestic production of battery-powered cars as well as car batteries. But, Ollie, I know, and you know, that electric cars doesn't solve the problem, does it?
It moves a problem at the moment. I mean, it is a step in
electricity.
It is a step in the right direction. You know, electric cars are obviously mostly run, or they're dependent on being their cleanliness. It's effectively dependent on how clean the generation of the electricity was. So, if your car is run on electricity that was produced by burning coal, then it's effectively, the emissions are not coming out of the car, they're coming out of the power station, but there's still emissions. But the thing is, you can, whereas a car will always burn petrol, an electric car will always use electricity. And if you change the way the electricity is generated, so if you buy an electric car tomorrow and it's run on coal power for the next 2 years, and then they switch to solar power, then your car has suddenly become miraculously more green. And it's also, if you're driving a car around the middle of Palma, you're chucking out pollution into the place where people live, whereas power stations tend to be in areas of lower population, where the emissions are less of the emissions of carbon are still a problem, but the emissions of particulates are not going straight up people's noses in the way that they would be if you're burning petrol in the middle of Palma. There is also the environmental cost of batteries, which is huge. There's lots of nasty chemicals and lead and stuff like that, and recycling issues. But it is definitely a step in the right direction. And the Balearics actually has made the Balearic government makes a lot of big pledges about environmentalism. With talking about making sure that all the rental cars and all the taxis and all the things, we've got targets of, is it 2030 to have it electric only here?
I don't know, but it's not far away.
No, it isn't very far away. It's we are at on the cusp of new technologies, whether it's going to be batteries or hydrogen fuel cells, don't know, but it seems that the days of the internal combustion engine are numbered.
Well, I think that's a good thing for our environment. But the other thing that's been going on in the environment this week, shockingly large amounts of jellyfish have turned up in the water.
And, like a really huge amount. Yes. And some real bad boys in there.
Well, I have a friend who is quite popular on Instagram. Her Instagram tag is Island Girl Mallorca, And her name is Anka, and she is we share an office with her, and she on her Instagram stories this week, she was on a jet ski, which is
frequently on a jet ski.
She loves her jet ski. She loves to go out.
I'm sure she does.
I wonder if you can get electric powered jet skis, because she's going to be a whole heap of trouble if she can't, because she's going to be really sad without it. And she was out on the water in the southwest of the island, and she made a video of this incredible amount of bright pink jellyfish that were in the water. It was disgusting. I mean, it gave me the shivers, and it made me feel really, really... I don't have a problem normally with looking at things like that, but it really gave me the chills, because swimming through that would be awful, like a sting. Have you ever been stung by a jellyfish?
A couple of times, yeah.
I've never been stung by one.
It depends. You know, people get very scared of jellyfish, and they're not really nice. It's not great to be stung by them, but sometimes it's a little bit of a sort of stinging nettle thing, and sometimes it's an absolute wham, you know. And only a few times I've been stung. But, I mean, it's not uncommon in the early part of the year. So April, May, there is actually quite a large blooms of jellyfish. Is that the collective
word? I think that's a cool word for them, yes.
But mostly in the middle of the summer, they're not really here.
We're lucky they're not so many around in the summer. But it gets hotter.
Yeah, it tends to be the storms of the early part of the year that bring them in.
And that's what brought them to the south from the north. And it's a jellyfish called the Pelagia noctiluca, which is very common in Mallorca. And they normally live on the high seas, and they're common throughout apparently the Western Med. But they get displaced by sea currents. And once they're here, that's it. They can't really leave, so they'll be here until they die.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And our little local beach in San Telmo in the southwest actually is, because of the way it's angled out to the sea, it tends to, if the weather's in the right direction, they can get tons of jellyfish in there. We've seen them before with JCBs, you know, filling lorries of jellyfish. So they are here. We've also got a few Portuguese men of war. Would you say men of wars or man of wars?
I don't know.
Men of war.
Jellyfish.
They look like little condoms floating about, don't they? Little blue inflatable numbers. They are quite deadly.
They are horrible.
That sounds a bit overdramatic.
Dangerous.
They're a very nasty sting and can be deadly. But they float on the surface, so you've got at least a fighting chance
of seeing them.
But very long tentacles. So
yes.
Don't assume you're fine just because it's not near you. But they have issued warnings of those, but keep your eyes open. There's also these really, really cool ones called Vileias, which are not technically jellyfish in the same way that Portuguese man-of-wars are not technically jellyfish. Mm-hmm. But the Vileias, they look like sort of plastic bottle caps. And they really do look like little round circles of plastic. And they've got a little sail that they flip up.
No.
And they kind of... And they just blow around. I don't think... Those don't sting at all.
They sound like they've got brains.
No. I don't know how bright they are, but they just put the sail up and it tends to blow them onto the beach where they dry out.
You know, so a lot of people have jellyfish phobias, and having seen the little video the other day of Anka's encounter with probably about 200 jellyfish, I get it.
Look, we've got friends here who won't go in the sea at all because of the chance of getting stung by
and
jellyfish.
And sharks, though. I mean, they also think they're going to get eaten by sharks. It's like, no.
And I mean, I love swimming in the sea. It's one of the great pleasures. And if you live in somewhere like Mallorca where you've got blood temperature turquoise water for half the year, it's like, it's a shame not to go in the sea, especially when the alternative is going and swimming in the local pool, which is sort of bleach and
full of urine.
Bleach and other people's wee. I don't know which I'd rather take my chances with. But, you know, I mean, look, if I get in the water and there's jellyfish around me, I'll get out and come back another day.
Yeah.
So you tend to get a lot of jellyfish or none. There's nothing in between. It's when you get the rogue one, you think, oh, there's no jellyfish in here, you're swimming around, and suddenly you feel a zap.
I've never, ever, ever been stung, and I've swum in the sea in Mallorca since 2000, well, the beginning of 2000, every summer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's...
Some people are just lucky. This year it'll be my turn now.
For me, it's kind of like, I don't want to go into the woods in case I get a stinging owl. You know, it's like that.
Yeah.
It's not that bad, mostly. A Portuguese man of war, I think, might be quite bad, so you might want to avoid that one.
But let's hope they've cleared up a little bit for next weekend.
For
Sean.
This is
our and finally.
This is a go big or go home, isn't it, Sean? This is the Mallorca Odyssey. next weekend. It's well, why don't you tell us, tee it up, tell us about
it. All right, well, Sean Judkins, who is a resident of Mallorca, he's originally from New Zealand. He is married to Anita, and she had cancer in 2014 and thankfully recovered from it. But throughout the years since then, she's done lots of fundraising events for the cancer support group, who supported her, loads of people who have cancer and the families of people with cancer on the island. And Sean decided that this year he's going to do a fundraising event. So over 2 days...
Yeah, Anita had been walking the Tramontana a few
times.
Yeah,
she's done the GR221 with a squad of chicks for the last few years, but I don't think she's doing it this year. It's pretty hard to do it this year because nowhere to stay, I imagine.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sean is doing, over 2 days, April the 17th and April the 18th, something that is quite impressive. He is basically, I don't know how to explain it, but he's going to...
On their website.
Traverse the Tramont. He's going to basically go around the island on a kayak and cycling and running. And
over
he's going
2 days.
To do... A lot of miles.
I have absolutely no idea how this is even possible. And I'm hoping Sean is more confident it's possible.
It's extraordinary. So,
we do a cycling event every year where we basically do a loop of the island in over 3 days, 400 kilometres more or less that we do. But it's on a bike, right? Bikes are quite quick, even when I'm pedalling them. But Sean is going to be riding, which I'm sure he'll be quick, running. Is he swimming or kayaking? No, he's just kayaking. So running and kayaking are obviously a bit slower. But his idea, his reason were, he said he needed, this is taking him from his own website, I needed to get a reason to get me off the couch. Something was hard enough to scare me. He wanted to help the amazing charity Cancer Support Mallorca and to go one better than his wife.
Go on, lads. You could try.
So next Saturday, 17th of April, day one is going to be...
Okay, so day one, stage one, he's going to kayak from Santa Ponsa to St. Elmo, which is 23 kilometres in the sea.
You see, that's enough for a day.
That's enough already. Right. My arms would be so sore.
Hmm.
Then stage two, so he's going to get out of his kayak in St. Elmo, and he's going to cycle the Binarache, which is 68 kilometres distance and 1,850 metre elevation. And then stage three, he's going to run from Binarache. Thank you.
Binarache.
To you.
Binarache?
I think it was Rach. Anyway,
yeah.
From Binarache to Uke, which is 23 kilometres, and another 1,450 metre elevation. And then this is stage, this is all in the same day.
Yeah.
Stage four, he's then going to get back on his bike and he's going to cycle from Uke to Alcudia, which is another 35 kilometres and another 140 metre elevation. And then finally, just for this day, he's going to run from Alcudia. Where's he going? He's just running around Alcudia. Another 21 kilometres. It's a
half marathon to finish the day off.
Yeah, a 960 metre elevation.
That's a lot.
That's day one.
That really is a lot. I mean, just the walk from, or the run from Binarache to Uke. I mean, that goes up the old, up the old Barank, which is 800 metres of steps, stone steps, before you get to the top. And then you've got to go over the top, run past the lakes, I guess he's going the roads to Uke. That's any one of those disciplines is enough for a day, and he's doing more than a day.
And then day two.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully you'll sleep well on Saturday night, yeah. I think.
And hopefully he'll avoid the jellyfish on his kayak.
Yeah, flipping jellyfish into his face with his oars. That would be bad. So day two, he starts off again in Alcudia and he's going to kayak to Colonia San Pere, which is 21 kilometres. And then he's going to run from San Pere to Cala
Mesquita. At least kayaking's flat.
True.
There's no hills.
Let's hope he's not windy.
Yeah.
Or wet. Then he's going to run from San Pere to Cala Mesquita, which is another 21 kilometres and another 655 metre elevation.
Through the Yvant Nature Reserve where we did our horse riding.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, I'm looking at the map. And then he is going to cycle from Cala Mesquita to Arenal, which is a 101 kilometre bike ride and another 840 metre elevation. And then he's going to do for stage nine, which is another kayak. He's going to kayak from El Renal to Port Elsevier, which is 29 kilometres in the sea. And then finally, It's just a light jog of 15 kilometres from Port Alsfays to Santa Ponsa and just a mere 310 metre elevation.
And then a gigantic beer.
And then a coma, I imagine. Some sort of 3 or 4 day lie down after
that. That's a lot, isn't it? And look,
I've got to say, he's got every single stage is now sponsored by somebody. He's got a great bunch of sponsors together. But if you want to join him on any of those stages, you can. And he's just asking for people to give donations of money towards the charity.
Check out their Facebook page, because actually they're limited by the amount of people they can have with them.
Yeah.
The COVID regulations, they're already, some of the stages are already getting full.
Oh, okay. So, are you going to do one?
I might go and take pictures of him as he goes past me at lightning speed.
Why don't you ride with him from St Helm to Binnen Reach?
Maybe we'll see him there.
Saturday. Why don't you do that?
Maybe I will. It starts down near here, doesn't it?
Why don't you do that,
and
Ollie?
Then ride back. Yeah.
Go on.
I will. I'll go and sign up. If there's space, I will.
I think you should.
Yeah.
I think that would be great.
This is a proper superhuman effort. So, yeah.
Go on, Opie's Sean.
If he doesn't make it, it won't be for lack of determination. Good luck to Sean for next weekend. Have you got his website there or a Facebook page or something?
No, I've managed to
shut that down. You keep talking for a second while I find that.
Okay. Well, I have
but,
to.
But he will be.
Say, I've met him and he's a lovely guy.
He is.
And also, he's a great dad. Because I remember a couple of times we were together when one of his daughters was performing, and we both got a bit teary and proud, you know, about what was going on. I was taking pictures of this event, and he was there. He's a really nice guy, and I really hope he finishes it all in one piece. I'm sure he will finish it, but my goodness. What a
that is go big or go home, isn't it?
Take a bit of a toll on his body. But well done, Sean.
If you go and look for Mallorca Odyssey, is the name.
Mallorca with the double L.
Mallorca with the double L Odyssey.
Okay, and we'll put the link in the show notes.
Yeah, we should do that, shouldn't we? So rather than have me faffing about trying to find it, we'll just look below.
Yeah.
And we'll have done that for you. So that's next weekend.
Okay.
Coming up in future episodes, we have.
Tomorrow, we're going to go and re-interview Becky from Mallorca Solutions and catch up with her about residency applications, what the changes in the law have meant for people living in Mallorca who are from Britain, things like business stuff, how to buy a house, all the things that people are now freaking out about.
Yeah, they're a paperwork
visas,
company. They help
residencies.
They help you with all the stuff that you can't be bothered or to do. You pay them and to help you out, and they'll go and queue on your behalf and tell you what you need to bring and all of that kind of stuff. So very helpful company for, well, almost everybody here. And a regular...
Help us a lot.
We did a podcast with her a while back, but it's definitely...
I did it last summer. We actually sat in her car and did the interview because in her old... She's moved offices now, actually. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Office is in San Bucadeus now. Yep. Before it was in Palmanova. In her old office, it was really echoey, so we ended up sitting in her car in the aircon with the aircon last August.
Anyway, it's definitely time for an update from Becky, so that will be coming up in the few episodes. And we spoke to George, who's doing sterling work in Andratch.
George Dudfield,
and his dad Alec.
And Alec Dudfield and two other gentlemen whose names I've written down but don't have with me have founded a food bank
called Sopa.
And it's a food bank with a difference because it's all fresh fruit and veggies. And really, really loved going to meet George on Friday. So that episode will be coming up next weekend once we've put it all together.
Yeah, exactly. So plenty to look forward to. If you want to get in contact with us, you'll have to ask my wife what the email address is.
You can either email us on Mallorca with a J and then Mallorca with a double L, podcast@gmail.com. You can send us a message on Instagram at our Mallorca Mallorca podcast Instagram account, or you can send us a message to our Facebook page, Mallorca Mallorca. You can also join our Facebook group, which is called mallorcamallorca.together.
Oh yeah, and if you're listening to this podcast, why don't you look and click subscribe?
Oh yeah, and if you wouldn't mind, it would be great if you could leave us a 5-star review. That really helps, actually, apparently, to get us found by more people.
Very good.
That would be great. And in the meantime, have a lovely weekend.
Yeah.
What's left of it?
Well, not a great deal left of it, is there?
No, we've been sat here chit chatting.
Fabulous. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Cheers.
jokes. Mallorca, 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 let's call all three.
Bloody good show and do a podcast about it.